All right, well, we've crossed the first hurdle, and we're talking about stress, so it's a pertinent thing, believe me. But anyway, good morning, everybody, and I'm just so grateful for having the opportunity to be here today and talk to you about a topic that's, I'm sure, close to everybody's heart in this room, and certainly is close to my heart. And I pray that you will just be able to catch the vision of how modern brain science and biblical principles work together in perfect harmony to show us that how our thoughts and our emotions really can impact our bodies in either a positive or a negative way. You know, it's only been in the last 20 years or so that brain science has actually found out about this. All right, this is relatively new information. And the amazing thing to me is that thousands of years ago, the writer to the book of Proverbs said, "As a man thinks in his heart, so is he." So finally, modern brain science has caught up with the Bible, which is pretty amazing. And you know, while neurons and genes all play a part, the way we use our brain can make a difference in our response to the world and ultimately our health. So my prayer is that wherever you are on the continuum of health and wellness, that you will rediscover God's plan for health, happiness, and hope today, and that you'll be able to restart your body and renew your mind and revive your spirit. And I know that we have some people here, at least from the health field, so I'm counting on you guys to chime in. I hope this is not going to be a total lecture all day, because I might go crazy. So, and you wouldn't want that. So anyway, Snoopy here is talking to Woodstock, and maybe you feel a little like this. He says, "Does the body rule the mind, or does the mind rule the body?" And the answer is, I don't know. So, but by the end of today, my prayer is that you'll rediscover what God has to say about that. And in order to do that, we have three objectives for today. The first is to gain a clearer picture of how brain strain, lifestyle choices, toxic thinking, and spirituality impact your health and wellness. To learn to use an assortment of tools and techniques for balancing your body, mind, and spirit, and to apply the principles of biblical hope and happiness as the spiritual foundation to your health. Okay, so that's it. And you've already heard that I've been in practice for over 35 years, specializing since 1996 in women's reproductive psychiatry. And I just have to say that women everywhere inspire me. In fact, you all inspire me, because as I think about it, it's Saturday, and here you all are. And I'm like, oh my goodness. There's so many things that you all could be doing besides sitting here and trying to learn something new about your health. But I really applaud you for being here. And I just see women taking care of so many things, work and their families and sometimes aging parents and so much. And it's just like piling on, piling on, piling on. And they do it with amazing skill. But as Joy said earlier, do you sometimes feel like your brain has just been switched off? Not today, hopefully. Switch it back on if it went off. But anyway, but do you just feel like, oh, discouraged, maybe, overwhelmed? I know as a Christian you're not supposed to say that, but I say a lot of heretical things. So. But it's the truth. I mean, that is the way it happens for a lot of us, right? And the link between our brain and our lifestyle choices and our health is really profound. And it's really important that we redefine our mind and bring it into alignment spiritually with biblical principles in order to promote health and wellness. Now, there's too much to cover in this short period of time. So I just want to alert you to the fact that next week there will be two resources available. There's lots of resources available, but I'm telling you about these two, are going to be available on Amazon. And the first is a book that I just finished called Your Mind Redefined, Rediscover God's Plan for Health, Happiness, and Hope. And everything that I'm talking about today is pretty much in this book, plus a whole lot more. You'll get a lot more detail about the female brain and what makes us unique as women. You'll see some recipes and also just have a whole group of references, other references in there that you can refer to. So that will be available next week, as well as a companion journal called My Mindful Journal. And we'll be talking a lot today about journaling and how that can really help you get a grasp of what's going on with your emotions. And the journal goes along with the book, part two of the book, and it uses the fruit of the spirit as the foundation for the journaling. So it will teach you how to journal, what questions to ask yourself, so that you can really gain a better awareness of where things are at with you on an emotional level. So as Joy mentioned, on your feedback form, there's a place for your email address. And if you put your email on there, next week I would be happy to send you a free copy of a couple of chapters from the book so that you can review them and the material will be available to you on Amazon next week, God willing. All right, just a word of disclaimer before we start, and I just want to make this very clear that the seminar today is not intended to provide you with medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All the content is for informational purposes only, and I would strongly urge you to always seek the advice of a qualified healthcare professional for questions about a medical condition, and never put off seeking advice because of anything you hear today. Okay, so with that being said, I just want to say that I believe that women have been sold a bill of goods. I don't know if you ever feel like that, but I do a lot. Because women have been sold a bill of goods, meaning that they think they can have it all. And I've been there myself. I don't know if you have, where you can, you know, have a family, go to work, do, you know, take care of everything, dress appropriately and do whatever and really pull it all together in an amazing way. Because I just don't believe that that's true. Something's going to suffer. I don't know if any of you maybe don't feel that way. Feel free to speak up. Anyway, the more I study the relationship between the brain and hormones and our moods, I'm just convinced about the exquisite communication that goes on all day long. And brain strain, as it's been called, is really at epidemic levels in our society today. Sometimes I'm sure you must feel like your brain is ready to explode because there's so much bombarding you. I mean, you know, we used to be able to even book our travel with a travel agent, right? And now it's like you want to go on a trip. It's like, you got to get on the computer and do it yourself. And everything is do it yourself. And it's supposed to be more convenient, and it is in certain respects, but it seems like it all just kind of falls in your lap. I'm getting feedback here. Is this okay? I don't know, all of a sudden. Are you guys having a little trouble hearing me in the back? Can everyone hear? Okay. All right. Well, anyway, in our first session this morning, we're going to be talking about brain strain and your health, God's plan for balanced living in a chaotic world. And if I can figure out why this mouse isn't working right, we'll be in business. But anyway, what I've developed is an acronym. For health, and it includes every letter of the word health, to help you understand what components go into having optimum health and wellness. And I'm having a little technical problem here. So the first H. The first H is for hope and happiness, and that forms the foundation for health, the spiritual foundation for health. And because it's such an important topic, we're going to be spending the whole entire afternoon session talking about hope and happiness. Exercise is the energy for health. And we now know, really, that exercise, besides being good for our bodies, is good for our brains as well, helps to build connections for our neurons in our brain. So it's not only good for our bodies and our hearts and our muscles, but it also helps our brains. A stands for amygdala or brain balance, and the amygdala is really the center of our emotions in the limbic system of our brain, way here on the temporal area of our brain, way inside. And it's the center where we have fear, anger, aggression, and it's really important that this keeps in balance, and this is what we're going to be talking about when we're talking about brain strain today. Lifestyle is the sustainability of health, and in order to keep our health the way we want it to be, we need to pay attention to our lifestyle. Toxic thoughts are the roadblock to health. And a toxic thought is any thought that generates negative emotions, right? Like frustration, or worry, or lack of forgiveness. Can you relate to any of this? Anger. These are all toxic thoughts, and we're going to talk about toxic thoughts and how they really can negatively impact our brains and ultimately our health. And the final H stands for hormones, which are the fuel for health. I'm having trouble with this mouse, I'm sorry. The writer of Proverbs says that anxiety weighs down the heart. Have you experienced that? When you're anxious, doesn't it weigh down your heart? You're like, ugh, you know?
What verse is that?
Right.
What verse is that?
That anxiety weighs down the heart. It is Proverbs 12:25. Yeah, and I do have to say, I do have the references, and a lot of times they're going to be on the slides. We're not turning in the Bible a lot because it's going to just take too much time out of our day, but I'm happy to go over any references that anybody wants. Okay. It also says, cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It only causes harm. Okay, that is Psalm 37:8. So, one thing I did want to mention just about hormones in terms of it being the fuel for health, we know that there's a direct correlation that as hormone levels decline, debilitating illnesses go up. And I don't know if any of you have experienced that firsthand, but it certainly is true. Things like arthritis, osteoporosis, mental decline, cancer, heart disease, obesity, loss of sex drive, incontinence, and many other problems increase as hormone levels go down. So that's why hormones are considered the fuel for health. Well, we're going to start off with a little bit about the brain, because in order to really understand what's going on, we have to kind of know something about the brain. And the brain is the command center that governs everything. So let me hear from you all. What, in fact, does the brain govern? It's only 3 pounds, right? But it's our body's most complex organ. Can anybody call out, what do you think the brain governs? Words, I hear words, right?
Thoughts.
Right. Our heartbeat. Our blood pressure. Right? That's right. Our balance, our coordination, everything. The brain governs everything. And so doesn't it make sense that we have to keep our brain in good working order? We don't think about it all that much, right? A lot of times, unless we've had an experience of somebody having a stroke or a traumatic brain injury of some sort, we're really not thinking too much about the brain. We go about our business and do whatever. But actually, the brain is the most complex organ in the body, with all its intricate systems of nerve fibers and chemical messengers called neurotransmitters and hormones. So we want to keep that in good working order. Well, this poor woman is certainly being pulled in many different directions. And whether or not you can relate to what she's doing, you certainly can relate to the concept of being pulled in 12 different directions at the same time. And she really does look bedraggled. And the thing is even though we think that we're doing several things at once, multitasking, as we all hear the buzzword, is actually, I believe, a complete illusion. And I would even say it's a diabolical illusion, because it cannot be done. A leading neuroscientist at MIT named Earl Miller is one of the world's experts on divided attention. And he says that our brains are not wired to multitask well. And in fact, when people are multitasking, they're actually switching from one task to another. They're not really doing all these tasks at the same time. They're switching from one task to another. And so there's a cognitive cost at doing that. And so much so that another study done in Gresham College in London actually found out that multitasking can reduce your IQ by 10 points. So if you think you're getting stupid, stop multitasking. And that's it. But what it does is, how does it do this? Multitasking increases our stress hormone, cortisol, and adrenaline, and it overstimulates our brain to cause mental fog and scrambled thinking. So that's what happens, and it's kind of a funny thing, because our prefrontal cortex, which is this part of our brain, gets hijacked, more or less. And the part of our brain that normally should be sorting things out and keeping things in order, it doesn't do it anymore. It can't do it. It becomes totally distracted. But there is a solution. And the solution is mindfulness. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard about mindfulness, but mindfulness is just basically staying in the present. Staying in the present. And as I said, most of us are so busy doing this, doing that, thinking about this, thinking about that. It's very difficult to stay in the present, right here and now. But that's what it's about. And the psalmist said in Psalm 131:2, surely I have calmed and quieted my soul. So it's initiative that we have to take. I have calmed and quieted my soul. No one else is going to do it for you. It's something that you have to do, and it's a priority. And Isaiah follows along with the same thought by saying, those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Isaiah 40, 31. Again, the initiative begins with us. And it doesn't say that our stress is going to go away and everything's going to be peachy keeny, but what it does say is that our strength will be renewed and will mount up with wings like eagles. We spend a lot of time talking about prayer and praying, and even if our prayers are unselfish and we're praising God, we're thanking Him, we're worshiping Him, it still is us talking to God. But how much time are we spending in mindfulness and meditation, which is allowing God to talk to us? If we're doing all the chattering, even if it's good chattering, we're not allowing the Holy Spirit to communicate with our spirit and tell us what He wants to tell us. We hear that in Romans 8:16, that the Spirit Himself bears witness with our spirit that we are the children of God. So mindful breathing is an important strategy to implement for all of us. And you know when it's really good to use is before you have your personal quiet time, and also before you go to the morning meeting. Because I don't know if you're like me, but you're running around and you're doing this and you're doing that, and it's like, boom, okay, here I am. Okay. So we need to calm and quiet our soul, as the psalmist said. It's very important. And so what I thought we would do is introduce you a little bit to mindfulness breathing and mindfulness listening. I was first introduced to this way back in college when I heard a beautiful hymn, which I'm going to play for you now, which is called Speak, Lord, in the Stillness, While I Wait on Thee. Has anyone heard that hymn? Does anybody know that hymn? It's a really old hymn. It was written by a godly woman named May Grimes way back in the late 1800s. And what I'd like for us to do is to do some mindful breathing and listening while we listen to the hymn, and I'm going to read the words. Now, mindful breathing is simply bringing our focus to our breathing. We breathe all the time, but most of the time we're not even conscious of our breathing, right? We don't even think about it. But what it's doing is it's bringing nutrients into our body, cleansing our body from the toxic wastes, and allowing us to breathe out those things that we need to get rid of, so that we can really listen and hear what God has to say. Doesn't matter if it's fast or slow, shallow or deep. It doesn't matter. It just matters that you're present in the moment, that you're noticing where you are. And so what I'd like you to do right now is to just get comfortable and close your eyes for a minute. Don't go to sleep on me. And I'm going to make an attempt to play this hymn. And while you sit there, just take a moment now and just notice your breath. Notice your breath, whatever it's doing. Again, it may be shallow, it may be deep, it may be fast, it may be slow. Notice the chair. Is it hard or is it soft? Is anything bothering you? You got any aches or pains going on? Just notice it, but then bring your attention back to your breathing again. And while you're doing that, we'll listen to the hymn. Can you hear it? Okay. Speak, Lord, in the stillness, while I wait on thee. Hush my heart to listen in expectancy. Speak, O blessed Master, in this quiet hour. Let me see thy face, Lord, feel thy touch of power. For the words thou speakest, they are life indeed. Living bread from heaven, now my spirit feed. All to thee is yielded, I am not my own. Blissful, glad surrender, I am thine alone. Fill me with the knowledge of thy glorious will. All thine own good pleasure, my life fulfill. Like a watered garden, full of fragrance rare, lingering in thy presence, let my life appear. Okay, take a moment now and reorient yourself. How was that experience? Just allows you to just be quiet. Were you able to stay in the present without thinking, gee, I should have been here or there or doing this or that, or what are we doing, or this feels odd to me, you know, or whatever. By simply noticing our breath moving through our body and listening to the words of the hymn, it's one way to learn how to quiet and calm your soul, as the psalmist talked about. Well, back to reality. Wake up. Does this sound like you? What words are playing in your head normally? What defines who you are? Do you say things to yourself like, I'm a failure, I'm lonely, I'm disorganized, I'm anxious, I'm frustrated, I can't cope, I'm angry, I'm successful, or I'm popular, or I'm happy, or I'm likable? Maybe you have more positive thoughts, right? Your moods can be influenced by many things, including where you are in your monthly cycle, or the lives of your family members, your husband, your children. What else is going on? Whether or not you got restorative sleep can influence your moods, right? Or how you're viewing the circumstances of your life. And again, that's known as toxic thinking. So we can't change our circumstances, but we can control our reactions to those circumstances. And I thought the contemporary English version of Romans 12:2 said it very well when it says, let God change the way you think. Let God change the way you think. Well, cognitive restructuring is an important strategy to address brain strain. And I don't know if folks are familiar with that. But cognitive distortions are the way that our brain convinces us of something that's not true. It's called an inaccurate thought. And we all have them. There are 10 basic cognitive distortions. And I thought we should just review them quickly. So, the first is all or nothing thinking. And all or nothing thinking is about black and white thinking. It's about perfectionism. Anybody here a perfectionist? And there's nothing wrong with that, except that if it interferes with your life, does it interfere with you being showing hospitality to others? Does it interfere with you interacting with other people? For some people, it does. But all or nothing thinking is the first cognitive distortion. The second one is mental filter. And mental filter has someone focusing just on the negatives and filtering out the positives. Are you one of those people that notices the one thing that went wrong and never sees any of the other things that went right? That's called a mental filter. And then there's overgeneralization. And this is sort of the same thing where you see one single negative event in a never-ending pattern of defeat. So one thing goes wrong and it's like, oh, I can't do anything. So that's the way that goes. I'm having trouble with this. The next one is disqualifying the positive. And in this type of thinking, we insist that positive experience don't count for some reason or another. So we just do something well, but we say, that was just luck, or whatever you want to say about it. It just happened. Okay, that's disqualifying. The next one is jumping to conclusions. And this distortion assumes a negative interpretation, even though there are no definite facts to support the conclusions. And that involves two types of thinking. It involves mind reading and fortune telling. Did you think you were a mind reader or fortune telling? Okay, so when you jump to conclusions, have you ever found yourself saying, without checking something out, I know she secretly hates me? That's mind reading. And fortune telling is that you anticipate that something's going to turn out badly based on your own prediction. I just know something bad is going to happen. That's fortune telling. And that's all part of jumping to conclusions. The next one is a very familiar one, catastrophizing. You know anybody like that? In this type of thinking, you expect the worst case scenario to happen, right? You exaggerate the importance of something, such as a goof up, or even somebody else's achievement. It could be either one. Then you have emotional reasoning. And emotional reasoning assumes that our negative emotions and feelings must reflect the way that things really are. And I've seen this with new mothers a lot, and I've heard this over and over again, where I feel frightened right now. This must mean I'm an incompetent mother. And you can fill in the blanks, whatever fits your life, right? So that's emotional reasoning, coming to a conclusion just based on your emotions. The next cognitive distortion is should statements. And should statements also include the musts and the oughts. I should do this, I should do that, I ought to do that, I ought to do that. Do you ever think like that? Women are notorious about that. And it all oftentimes generates feelings of guilt, right? Because you didn't live up to the expectation that you set for yourself. And what happens is when you do that to another person, presumably your spouse or somebody else, that often generates feelings of anger, right? And frustration. And maybe some of you can relate to that as well. The next distortion is labeling and mislabeling. And this is kind of an extreme form of overgeneralization. And what it does is that it's when you label yourself in a negative way, right? Do you ever do that? I'm a failure. I'm an idiot. I'm a loser. And sometimes you get into these patterns and you just kind of do that to yourself, right? And it's not really true. And then there's personalization. And personalization is the type of distortion when we assume responsibility for things outside of our control. And so that someone might say, it's my fault that my son got in an accident. I should have warned him to drive more carefully in the rain. Well, that would not be why the person had the accident. And I know that some of you know this situation that happened to somebody this past couple of days where their son died. And I don't know what the mom is thinking after she found her son in bed, but you know, a cognitive distortion would be a personalization where she would be assuming responsibility that maybe she didn't check him or she should have picked up some signs earlier in the evening or whatever before this happened. So cognitive therapy, I don't know if any of you are familiar with cognitive therapy. Has anyone heard of CBT? It's sometimes called CBT. Cognitive therapy is a way to handle these cognitive distortions, and it was sort of founded by Aaron Beck, who was a psychiatrist, actually from the Philadelphia area. And he just really discovered that oftentimes patients' difficulties revolved around this internal talk. And we all have it. We're all talking to ourselves all the time, right? And a lot of times, these automatic thoughts are not true. Or depending upon what the automatic thought is, it really determines our response to something. So for instance, say you're driving down the highway. I would say 95, but I guess over here it's 75. But whatever. Whatever highway, pick your highway, all right? And somebody cuts you off. So one response, one automatic response could be, how dare he cut me off? I'm not going to let him get away with that, right? And what's the result? Anger. Anger. The other automatic thought might be, wow, he's dangerous. I'm glad he's out of my way. And what's the result? Relief. So you can see how automatic thoughts can really impact how we feel. And this is all tied into toxic thinking. So the goal for yourself is to evaluate your automatic thoughts. Think about what your automatic thoughts are and see if they fit in any of these cognitive distortions. And you can be your own therapist, more or less, because it's not rocket science. And you can pretty much figure out if you're thinking in a way that is God-honoring or not. Now, thoughts are not harmless. What is a thought? It's just an electrical blurb that can be measured. Right? But it's not harmless. And you know, as I was thinking about this, actually this morning, I had to quick write down this verse because I thought, you know, that's why Jesus said in Matthew 5:28, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. It's a thought. And you say, how can this be? But it is, because thoughts are not harmless. Toxic thinking can be dangerous to you physically, emotionally, or spiritually because these thoughts are not only stored in your mind, science has shown us that these thoughts are actually stored in the cells of our body. So it's not just something in our mind, it's like in our whole body as well. God has given us a very intricate system of internal communication. And as you can see, these nerve cells look like branches of a tree, right? Just reaching out to each other. These are all neurons here. And as you're having a thought, one branch reaches out to another branch, and new connections are formed. We have about 100 billion, with a B, 100 billion neurons. That's a lot of neurons. With each one with about 50,000 connections. So it's like amazing if you think about it. 50,000 connections, and as we're processing information, about 400 billion actions per second. It's a lot of actions going on here right now in this room. 400 billion actions per second are happening. And again, not to overstate it, but it is important. Proverbs 23:7 says, "For as a man thinks in his heart, so is he." And we found that out in the last 20 years or so in modern brain science. But it's true. Brain science has been revolutionized by the field of neuroplasticity. And I don't know if anybody's heard about that. Have you heard that term, neuroplasticity? Neuroplasticity. What neuroplasticity is the brain's ability to reorganize itself and form new connections based on what we're thinking. We can actually change the structure and the function of our brain based on what we think about. I don't know about you, but I think that that's pretty amazing. Again, that's called renewing our mind. And the most interesting connections change between the thinking part of our brain, which is up here, the prefrontal cortex, and the feeling part of our brain in the limbic system. But that's why in Philippians 4:8, Paul instructs the Philippians to think about the things that are noble and just and true and pure and virtuous and praiseworthy, to meditate on those things. Can you get the connection? I mean, I don't know. You usually think about these verses, but what's actually happening when you think about these things, you're actually changing the connections in your brain. That is what's happening. And that's important to bear in mind. As I said, this is where the connections actually happen between the prefrontal cortex over here and the limbic system here in your brain. The spinal cord is where the information enters into your brain, and it goes into the limbic system where your amygdala is, which I talked about earlier. All your emotions are here. And then what generally happens is those emotions get funneled over here to the front of your brain, which is your prefrontal cortex. And that is how they get processed and you understand it. So what happens is sometimes there's a chemical dysregulation that occurs. And for women in particular who are sensitive to fluctuating hormone levels, the premenstrual period is a very touchy time where that communication between the limbic system and the prefrontal cortex system gets all thrown off kilter. So that's when some women experience that rage, that irritability, and the hostility that comes in the premenstrual time, because their prefrontal cortex can't buffer that any longer. This is what a neuron looks like up close. You saw the big photography picture of it, but that's what it really looks like. And this, just to let you know that there's three parts. There's the cell body where the DNA is right here. And then there's the dendrites. That's the part that looked like tree branches reaching out to the other tree branches. And that brings the information to the cell body. Right, and then you have the axon, which is like a long fiber that extends from the cell body, and it takes the information away from the cell body. So as we think, the dendrites are what continue to grow. This grows and actually forms connections with other dendrites in your brain. So our mind and body are literally linked by our thoughts. Every time we think a thought, protein synthesis happens in our brain. And everything changes. So we have a great ability to control what's going on. I just want to show you that this dark area here is a photograph that actually shows what a toxic thought looks like in our brain. And there's a whole lot of junk chemicals that are taking place there that can cause you to actually become ill. Do you ever notice when you're stressed? You get a cold, your arthritis starts acting up, you have diarrhea, constipation. All of that is because of toxic thoughts and stress, because the inflammation and the immune system is all thrown off. But you know, God is concerned with the attitudes of our heart. And emotions always reveal our faith. They always reveal our faith. They reveal our core belief about God and about ourselves and what's really important to us. If we struggle with anger, perhaps we think we can handle a situation better than God can. Right? Are we anxious and fearful? Perhaps our God is not wise enough to sort out the details or strong enough to handle any conflict. 2 Corinthians 10:5 tells us to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. Okay, I was going to go over self-control, but we're not going to do that now, so because we're running out of time quickly. But if you're a fast reader, it's in the book. It's in the book. But these are some questions to ask yourself about self-control. And this is what how the journal will help you to really think through what areas you're having trouble with and how to change some of the things that are going on in your life. What's driving your behavior? Am I making conscious choices or am I simply reacting? Am I manipulating my circumstances to reach my goals? Or, here's a good verse for you, Isaiah 64:4, do I believe that God works and shows himself active on behalf of him who earnestly waits for him? Hard to do, hard to wait. I don't know if you're like me, but I'm always trying, I think, to manipulate my circumstances. And I've been really aware of that lately, trying to step back and let God do the work. But there's the limbic system right there too, just so you can see. And just to let you know that this all happens from a signaling route that starts from our brain and goes all the way down to our adrenal glands, which sit above our kidneys in our body. There's a whole system that comes on, and you might hear this term, the HPA axis, but that's what it is. Well, stress can be triggered by all kinds of things, and it's not just a stressful experience. It can be triggered by the environment or by inflammation or not sleeping or even a trauma. But women are at the greatest risk, and it's important to really monitor your mood and symptoms. And on our website, we have a form that you can download that you can track your mood and symptoms. I'm going to pass it around, just pass it around so people can see it. It's primarily used for premenstrual problems, but it can be used for anything, and you can get a sense of how your whole mood and symptoms are coming together. On your workbook, if you'll turn to your workbook right now, I have a listing of the warning signs of stress overload. Now, we don't have lab tests that can manage and tell you if you're stressed. I think pretty much people know if they're stressed or not, but you might be surprised. I'd like you to take a pencil or a pen and circle the symptoms. that relate to you, the physical symptoms, the behavioral symptoms, the emotional symptoms, and the cognitive symptoms. Just take a minute and do that. What physical symptoms do you notice? These are warning signs. Many times we run to the doctor, right, or our healthcare provider, and we say that we have some of these symptoms, and the tests all come back negative. And we have to say to ourselves, what is my brain trying to tell me? So the breaking point occurs when you can't withstand the stress anymore. And some people are more stress tolerant, and some people are more stress resilient. And I'm not going to have time to really go into all that, but if you want to know more about that, we can talk some more about that. But some of the things that have been found that people who are more stress resilient are these 10 factors. And it was interesting to me to see that both faith and having a strong moral compass are two factors that really relate to stress resilience. We have receptors for cortisol all over our hippocampus, which is where our memories are stored. So you might also notice that when you're stressed, you're really like having trouble with your memory, right? You can't remember a thing. Well, that's because the receptors are getting overloaded with the cortisol. And I didn't get into that with the HPA axis, but actually, people who are stressed or depressed, they can't turn off cortisol. That's what we found out. And so it's just you're being flooded with it. And what happens is that there is a powerful group of proteins called BDNF. And I wrote it up there. It's got a big, long name. But anyway, it actually can get damaged, and the gene that produces it turns it off, so that leads to the depression and the forgetfulness. Just so that I don't give cortisol a completely bad rap, in terms of acute stress, cortisol is good, but in terms of chronic stress, as you can see, it leads to many problems. And cortisol does not get released in a straight line. Our cortisol is highest at around 8 o'clock in the morning and then should be decreasing throughout the day. However, if that doesn't occur, it can cause people to actually have insomnia in the middle of the night because cortisol can be being pumped out at 2 and 3 in the morning because a person is stressed. And another interesting thought is to show you that where cortisol is produced, which is in the adrenal glands, I told you, right? It starts in your brain, goes to your adrenal glands. When you're under stress, there's something called pregnenolone steal, which means that the cholesterol completely bypasses all your other hormones, including your sex hormones, and goes straight to cortisol. So everything else decreases. So it's really bad because, you know, your progesterone goes down, your estrogen goes down, everything goes down. And if you notice, what's the building block of it all? Isn't that interesting? What's the building block at the top? Yeah, well, cholesterol's gotten such a bad rap today, and I'm not saying that we should all go raise our cholesterol, but in fact, it is the building block for all of our other hormones, which is important to bear in mind. We all need to learn relaxation techniques. And have people learned relaxation techniques along the way, other places, like relaxation breathing, progressive muscle relaxation, things like that? There's all different ways to do relaxation, and I can go into that if you'd like to know, but there really are lots of ways that you can cut off that cortisol surge from the adrenaline glands. Just to say about relaxation breathing, and it's very simple. If you put your hand on your chest and your hand on your belly, and you breathe in through your nose, your belly should go out. Your chest should stay still. Hold it for 5 seconds, and then breathe out through your mouth and let your belly go in. So maybe just try it one time just so you get the feel of it. It's in through your nose and your belly expands. And hold it and then breathe out through your mouth. Herbert Benson did all the research on this, and believe me, it works. It works. I've used it many times, especially when I was doing consultation work in the hospital. I used to stop in the stairways as I'm running up in between patients doing this, and somebody ran by me one day, and they're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm relaxing." So anyway, there's lots of different relaxation techniques, but what I do want to really, really, really emphasize with you is I've been talking about stress for many years, and the fact of the matter is the new science of stress is showing us that how you think about stress is what matters. It's not even the stress, it's how you think about it. A huge study from the University of Wisconsin with 30,000 people, now we're not talking a shabby study here, 30,000 people, looked at them for 8 years, and they asked the question, how much stress have you experienced in the last year, and do you believe that stress is harmful to your health? Well, the bad news was that the people who experienced a lot of stress had a 43% risk of dying. However, that was only true of the people who also believed that stress was harmful for their health, which is fascinating, right? If they didn't believe that the stress was harmful to their health, in fact, they had less risk than the people who had little stress. So that is a really important point. And another study backed this up from Harvard that gave people a social stress test and taught them that, again, when their heart was pounding and their blood vessels were constricting, if they thought about it as helpful, their blood vessels didn't constrict. And it resembled the biology of courage and joy. And the third study was about the stress hormone oxytocin. And as women, we know all about oxytocin and bonding. And when we're stressed, oxytocin is released. So if we connect with other people when we're stressed, or we let other people connect with us, the stress loses its impact. So these are three big things that I want to emphasize to you. The first is how we think. Think about stress as helpful, and you will build the biology of courage. And a biblical example that I thought about was Joshua. Think about what God said to him. He was leading these children of Israel through the wilderness and out into the promised land. And you talk about stress. I mean, that was probably the ultimate stress, right? But what does he say to Joshua? Have I not commanded you, be strong and what? Of good courage, right? Don't be afraid or dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Joshua 1:9. So science has shown us that the emotion of courage keeps our blood vessels from constricting during times of stress and preventing the harmful effects on our body. But spiritual and physical connections are also important, as I said. And another example that came to mind is Jesus feeding the 5,000. Think about it. He had a stressful day all day with 5,000 men plus the women and children. And what did he do at the end of the day? He sat down and told the disciples to feed them. He tried to connect socially with these people. Right? He reached out socially and provided a meal. But then what did he do after that? He sent the disciples away and he connected with his Father, his Heavenly Father in heaven. So the spiritual connection was as important as a connection with other people in order to build stress resilience. So if you want to build stress resilience, these are three key things to do. And bear that in mind. I don't think you'll hear all of this at any other stress seminar. But actually, it really, really goes together. So the main key is to let God change the way you think. Learn mindfulness, breathing, and listening. Stay in the present. Avoid anxious thoughts. Calm and quiet your soul. And select one or more relaxation techniques and learn them. Learn them. Process your emotions by journaling your reactions. But most importantly, let God change the way you think.
Thank you, Janet.
Okay.
Questions? If you have any questions.
I know we ran fast. I'm sorry.
I will pick them up on this part of her presentation. Anybody wrote a question down? Or if you didn't write it down and you want to voice it, please go ahead and just voice it. I know you were so absorbed in taking notes and all that.
Oceanichealthresources.com. Okay. What?
It's on the handout too.
Right, it's on your handout, it's on your workbook. On your workbook and on the card.
Any other questions? Because after this we'll take a... yes.
Yes.
Okay, here's a question.
Oh, there was an... She was just asking a question, too.
Whatever.
Can you dwell a little more on concerning memory loss? Some of the things that you can do?
Yeah, well, again, like I said, the hippocampus, you saw the studs of the cortisol receptors all over the hippocampus. And so memory is very much connected with stress. So it just goes without saying that any of these techniques of decreasing your stress is going to help to turn off that cortisol. Because as long as the cortisol is pumping out, when people are under stress, they can't turn the cortisol off. And so it affects that BDNF, which gets a little confusing sometimes. But anyway, it's a protein that's in your brain. And BDNF acts as a fertilizer for your brain. It really helps you to remember or whatever. So you want that BDNF to be elevated. So decreasing your stress levels by using any of these techniques will help. I mean, not if there's a pathological problem with your memory, obviously, that's a different thing, but we're talking about stress now. So decreasing your stress will help that. Another thing that helps BDNF is folic acid. So if you take folic acid, methylfolate, that is also a good way to increase your BDNF in your brain, which will help your memory as well.
That's BDNF.
And B12 is very good too, and we're going to talk about that this afternoon as well. I mean, right after this, we will. With sugar. Well, you know, just like anything, if you get too much sugar, it's going to throw everything all out of kilter. I mean, I guess if there's anything to take away from all this, it's like we're in this like incredible balancing system. And if we get too far afield on anything, it's going to throw it out of alignment. And so, you know, we've learned that. Again, not that you can change your sugar, but I mean, if you're within reasonable intakes, how you think about things are going to help your whole body. I mean, it's going to help your blood vessels stay relaxed, which is going to help the whole process of digestion and everything else. So you'll use your nutrients better as well.
One last question before we break.
Okay.
What is reproductive psychiatry?
Okay. Reproductive psychiatry is dealing with women on any of the continuum from adolescence all the way through to menopause and postmenopause. I didn't even go through all that because I knew we were running out of time. But anything that relates to how the hormones impact your mood is reproductive psychiatry. Okay, so.
We'll take a break until, and come back in here by 11:30. I just need